Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Thursday, everybody. Great to have you with us. Bucknell won last night, beat Navy 69-57, so Bucknell rolls on. You have wrestling coming up tomorrow night in the Jordan Center at 7 when they take on Michigan. I thought T.K. Troy made a good point. He said several teams across the country, not Penn State, but several teams across the country, are getting to this time of the year where they're holding their wrestlers out and they're hurting the sport when they do it. Of course, they're thinking long-term about March, conference championship, and, of course, entry into the NCAAs and the NCAAs that will take place this time in Pittsburgh. It's a good point. But Penn State and fifth-ranked Michigan tomorrow night in the Jordan Center at 7. And, of course, Penn State basketball coming up tonight with the Nittany Lions taking on 17th-ranked Purdue. Purdue's also number 7 right now in the KenPom rankings, which we do put a lot of stock in. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Look, if you already brought a brand new car from Sunbury Motors, guess what? You went out today in your brand new car, you turned it on, it turned on right away, and the heat came on right away. And they had no problem running because it's brand new. Well, go to Sunbury Motors. They want to sell, I'll give you an example. They want to sell 1,000 brand new Fords this year. Great product, even better dealership, and a great service department. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I mentioned Bucknell won last night, beating Navy 69-57, so Bucknell marches on. Penn State has Purdue coming up tonight. Carson Edwards leads the Big Ten in scoring at 24 game, but what's interesting about Carson Edwards is that they become a better basketball team now that he is shooting less. Doesn't mean he's dramatically shooting less, but he's getting more people involved. Edwards, for example, did snap off 19 shots against Michigan State Sunday. The oddity of that game is Michigan State actually shot a higher percentage from the field. Purdue only shot 35%. But what happened was, in a lull for Michigan State, Purdue built a lead, and then they kept the lead. Even when Michigan State marched back against them on Sunday, they kept the lead. And that was the big part of that game on Sunday at Mackey Arena. Penn State, they haven't played since the Rutgers game on Saturday, which, again, another tough loss. That's 10 games to the final minute now. They're 2-8 in those games. You've heard the refrain over and over again. Well, let's see if they can find a way to break through. They need to avoid. It's interesting because Dick Girardi and I were talking about this yesterday. It's not as if you can pin one thing on all the losses. Yeah, there have been a couple losses where they've shot poorly at the free throw line. But believe it or not, it's only in like two or three of them where they shot poorly at the free throw line that really hurt them. Is it rebounding? No, it's not there. We kept looking, where are the common threads? The only thing I can come up with, and I said to Dick, is I feel like there's been a lull in the first half for 2-3 minutes. There's been a lull in the second half, 2-3 minutes, and it's usually right around the 15 to 12 mark of each half. That's the only common thread I can find in these games where they've lost. And, of course, it puts you behind the eight ball when it happens. It's interesting because we're trying to research to see if there's something, there's a commonality. All right, coming up, Patrick Chambers, Scott Walker. It's Coaches versus Cancer Night tonight at the BJC as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 at 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State basketball tonight with Purdue at the Jordan Center. Students get in free tonight because campus is closed today. And also, it's Coaches versus Cancer night. With that, we bring in the chair of the Coaches versus Cancer Committee, Scott Walker, and the head basketball coach of the Nittany Lions, Patrick Chambers. Patrick, great to have you with us.
Steve, thanks for having me, brother. Scotty, how you doing, pal?
Yeah, it's been a long time. No see. I told Scott. I said, "You look great." I said, "Looks like you've lost a couple pounds since the last time I saw you." Oh wait, that was last night. Okay, so let's get to this. There's been a designation every year for a game to be a coaches versus cancer game. So Scott, we'll talk with you. Start with you. How important is it, not just on fundraising on tickets, but also on awareness for what's coming up for the year?
Well, it's very important. You know, we need to get off on a good start, right, for 2019. This is our first event of the year. So, yeah, we're looking to raise money, and you can help out just simply by coming to the game. But in an effort to educate everybody on everything else we have going on, it's huge. You know, I set this down in front of you.
Yep.
We'll be handing these out at the game tomorrow night, but it lists the next handful of events coming up, and you know they're all very important to us, starting with the game tomorrow night.
Absolutely, and then we'll get to a few of these in a moment. Patrick, it's the 24th year of the event. Bruce Parkhill, Jerry Dunn, Ed DeChellis did great work. You've thrown your heart and soul into it along the way. What did it mean to you when you heard that they cracked the $3 million barrier?
You know what? It does start with Bruce and all the great coaches and all the great committee members throughout the years and all the amazing volunteers and then this community. I think it embodies what we're all about, what Penn State's all about, what Coaches versus Cancer's all about, what Thon's all about. And it's all about giving and serving and raising awareness and helping our neighbor, helping a friend, helping a family member, somebody in need. And maybe it's not monetarily. Maybe it's a smile. Maybe it's a laugh. Maybe it's a hug. Maybe it's just listening. It's just listening. And sometimes we could all use that. We've all been through this, Steve. You and I have had this conversation a million times.
Yes.
About this disease and what it can, how it can affect a family, and how it can affect so many people around that person, not just the person itself.
Right.
And that brings me to saying that the $3 million, it's awesome, and we got to keep going. And know that that money, and Scott and I talked about this morning, know that that money staying locally, and what does that mean? That means to pay a bill. That means food. That means gas. That means less stress and worry. They already have a ton of stress and worry in their lives, thinking about what the battle they have to go through. At least we could do is donate some money so, hey, you can go get an Uber. You can stay at Hope Lodge. Yeah. Stay at Hope Lodge if you really want to know the details of where your generosity is headed.
And, Scott, Hope Lodge is an important component to this because when someone's going through treatment, everybody else needs a place to stay.
Right, and I don't think a lot of people think about that. You know, once somebody is diagnosed, whether it's you or somebody in your family or a friend, I don't think they realize what happens after that. And that's where we're able to come in and make a difference. And Coach and I, like he said, we're talking about this morning, and I envision a sponsor or a volunteer maybe sitting down to write a check out to Coaches versus Cancer. And if you sit there and if you actually think where that money's going to end up going while you're writing that check, boy, it becomes an awful lot easier to do that.
Yeah, you know, and this is in my situation over the years of my life, I've made donations to Ronald McDonald House or Yawkey House, which is in Boston. And you know about Yawkey House, Patrick, because of your time.
Absolutely.
Your time at BU. And that's because that's what we needed. So I've always given back on that. Hope Lodge is the same concept here. And it's people don't realize it takes one less level of stress away in a very stressful situation.
Yep. And if money can help, you know, and that's the way we can provide help to them is through monetary donations, and we're more than willing to do that.
Patrick, you know, we're going to get to the events here in a moment. Just very quickly on the game itself, which is what you're focused in and locked in on. When people go to the game tomorrow night, and it's the Coaches versus Cancer game, again, you're going to face another outstanding opponent. When you look at what Matt Painter has been able to do with his team, starting with Carson Edwards, what do you see?
He's unguardable. I mean, he really is. I mean, I don't like saying that. I think Tim Frazier was unguardable, and I know what that feels like. I know what that looks like. We're going to do the best we can. We're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at him. I think it's the other guys that are really making them a top 25 team.
Ryan Klein.
Ryan Klein is just shooting the ball as well as ever, and he's been a Penn State killer over time. 2 years ago, he hits two threes, two corner threes to be detailed here. But I think the other guys are buying into the rules. The Eiferts of the world and Noel Eastern, I mean, they just play tough. They've always played tough. They've always played physical. And now I think Carson has bought in even more. Because in the beginning of the year, they lost to Virginia Tech. We beat Virginia Tech.
Right.
They lost to West Virginia in a scrimmage. We beat West Virginia at West Virginia. So what has transpired? Well, they have done a better job, or I should say Matt has done a great job with Carson Edwards to get him to buy in, to share the basketball more. So we got to understand what's coming at us tomorrow. It's a top 25 team. They're playing the best basketball. We have to get back to playing Penn State basketball, which is tough defense, rebounding the ball. Rebounding's are really hurting us, specifically at the end of games. I know, throughout the game, it's 14 offensive rebounds versus Rutgers, but it was that last one that really right. wins the game for them. So we got to do a good job rebounding, and we got to try to make him uncomfortable. And that, when I say him, that's Edwards.
You talk about Purdue and the buy-in from the players as to what Matt wants to do. It should be pointed out, though, and I can make the observation better than anybody because I can observe. Your players are bought in. How important has that been that you can turn the corner because you do have player buy-in and that they are committed to getting some things done?
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. They're bought in. And how do you know that? And you know this. They're in the gym.
Yes.
I'm not telling them to get in. They're in the gym. They're getting extra lifts. They're running on treadmills after games. They're watching extra film. They're bought in. We just got to teach them about the Big Ten and how to win that next possession, that ultimately that one or two possessions that swing the games to an L instead of a W. We're still learning how to win games in the Big Ten. Obviously, we haven't. So that's the next step for this team, that charge, that dive, that loose ball, whatever it is. That's the intangible that we need to get us over this hump. Tangible.
Yeah, there's no quite. Look, you're in one possession games. You are not in five possession games. Right? There's a big difference between teams losing by five and seven possessions and a team that's in one possession games. That means you're a speed bump away from doing it.
Yeah, you know what, Steve? And keep getting there. I know people are frustrated about my execution, my defense, whatever it is.
Right.
But we got to keep putting ourselves there. This is a new group. This is a young group. This is a group that's never done it before. They're learning on the, we're doing it in practice, but there's nothing like game experience. The more times we put ourselves in situations under the 8-minute mark, under the 4-minute mark in the second half, free throws will start to fall. The ball will start to bounce. The whistle will go our way. We need to continue or at least try to create the luck for ourselves, because I hear people, oh, you're so unlucky. How about that shot clock, Basil? How about this? You know what? I was so proud of Rozier for diving on it.
Yes.
I wasn't looking at it like that. I was like, there's a freshman who's starting to understand, I got to dive on loose balls now. And he had a dive early and he had a dive late. And I'm like, that kid's getting better.
And I mentioned this to you last night. Rozier, we know what I know what his numbers are. I keep track of these things. He's three for his last 24 in threes, and you and I both know he's a fabulous shooter. But in two of the last three games, I've noticed that he says, okay, if that's not working, I can be a scorer, and he's been a scorer for you. That tells me about maturity.
Absolutely, and it tells you about development. Let us continue to develop. It's what we're great at. It's one of our strengths.
Yes.
Let us continue to develop. You're not watching. So, let's go back to the early in the season. Are we a better team than we were in Cancun today?
Yes.
Absolutely. Even though we're not finding success, we are. Trust me, I've done that. I'm the crazy head coach that does stuff like that. We're much better today than we were then, even though we were winning games then. We're playing against the best competition in the country. Our strength of schedule is top 10. After tonight, it'll be top 5 again.
Yes.
And you know what? As crazy as this sounds, that's the way we want it. We want to play against the best.
And Scott, very quickly, during the course of the year, there are many other Coaches versus Cancer events where people can make a difference, including starting with, we've got this event coming up tomorrow, but then there's a Kentucky Derby weekend. There's other events that lead up to the golf tournament, the reverse drawing, and so forth.
Yeah, one more note about the game tomorrow night. If you are at the game and you want to help out more, there's a text to donate campaign. and you'll see it during the game tomorrow night. But if you text CVCPSU to 91999, those contributions will go to CVC as well.
Okay.
And then in the month of February, we talked on it a little bit last night. The American Cancer Society is really stepping up to the plate with a 3-point challenge.
Starting on Monday.
Yep. So they're running a 3-week contest, essentially. And each week is a different contest within that 3-week span. And if you get the most new pledges signed up during any one of those weeks, we get $7,000. Mm-hmm. Right to CVC Penn State. Second place gets $3,000.
Right.
And we've been, I think we finished first the last 2 years on that 3-point challenge. Yeah. So we need your help. We need you to sign up in those couple capacities. As far as the other events go, we're expanding. The committee is very dedicated, and they want to keep growing and doing more. You mentioned the race day soiree at Blake and Linda Gall's house.
Kentucky Derby Saturday.
Oh, boy, I've heard great things about it. You should see the pictures. You know, all the big fancy hats at the Kentucky Derby. Yeah. This will be the 9th annual race day soiree. And Coaches versus Cancer has stepped up to partner with the folks that have been running that for years. And with our powers combined, we hope to grow that event. And it's just another fantastic thing under the CVC umbrella all year long.
Steve, I can see you in a nice little top hat and a bow tie and really getting your Kentucky Derby on.
Let's face it, Patrick, you know I class up anything I go to.
Well, I think, would you like to MC as well?
If you wish.
I think we just sold a ticket, Coach. Yeah. We just sold a ticket. Congratulations, Steve. We'll send you the invoice.
And if not, contact PJ Moe.
He's giving away everything. He's buying them and then giving them away.
Oh, good. Yeah. Perfect. That's the guy to talk to.
That's the guy. Yeah. Our marquee event, the golf tournament, our 23rd annual. It is on May 30th and 31st. The reception the night before golf will be over at the ballpark.
Yep.
It'll be a blast. And then we have two flights on the 31st. Our golf tournament is our bread and butter. That's where we make most of our funds throughout the year. We had a great year last year. Like I think Coach said at the beginning of the conversation, we finally hit that $3 million net mark last year. We're really excited. So golf and then the Brew Expo Mike Martin puts together every year, August 17th up at Tussie Mountain. And the best party all year, in my opinion, the reverse card draw.
Yes, it is.
In the fall on September 19th.
Yes, it is. One final comment on all of this, Patrick, from you. $3 million is an awesome number, especially considering the market we're in, and it also tells you about the generosity. Going from $3 million to $4 million, for all we know, might mean the difference in finding cures. So how important will it be for everyone to continue to push to get to that $4 million as quickly as possible?
You know, Steve, I think we agree that we're making incredible strides. People are living longer lives. 20, 30 years ago, when they got this news, unfortunately, it might be a short time, a few weeks, a couple months. Now people are living longer. People are free of cancer. So our research and everything and development, everything that's going into it is paying off. So let's not wait another 20 years to get to 4 million. Let's get it done now. Let's keep this going. I know sometimes, Steve, we think, I've given the CVC. You know, I've been to the reverse card draw. I've done the golf outing. Yeah, I know you have, but it's still here, and we haven't beat this thing yet. And I think it's only a matter of time that we find a cure.
Patrick, thanks. Appreciate it. See you a little bit later.
See you, guys.
All right.
Thanks, Coach.
Scott, thanks so much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thanks, guys.
And basketball coach of the Nittany Lions, Patrick Chambers, and joining us here in the Sunbury Motors studio, it was great to have Scott Walker. Scott, thanks so much for joining us here today. As Penn State gets ready for the showdown with Purdue tonight in the Jordan Center at 7. Students get in free tonight and reduce ticket prices as well this evening. More in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all
applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. In a few moments, we'll talk to Nathan Baird, who's from the Lafayette Journal-Courier. He'll preview the Purdue part of tonight's Penn State-Purdue basketball game at the Jordan Center. Tomorrow, we'll have Jeff Byers on the show to preview Penn State wrestling against Michigan, which will be in the Jordan Center tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Well, another big day for the commissioner of the NFL. Yesterday at the annual Super Bowl press conference, Roger Goodell, of course, was asked to address the controversy in the Saints-Rams game. He said, quote, "We understand the frustration of the fans. I've talked to Coach Payton, the team, the players. We understand the frustration that they feel right now. We certainly want to address that. Here's the problem, though." He probably did talk. In fact, we know he talked to Coach Payton. That we do know. In terms of talking to the team and the players, no. According to tackle Zach Strief, Roger Goodell did not talk to any of the players on the team. Strief made a radio appearance yesterday. He said he's spoken to his teammates, and they've told him that they have not heard from Goodell since the title game. He also said that he specifically reached out to two players in particular, Drew Brees and Ben Watson. Watson, of course, was very outspoken, and, of course, Drew Brees, the acknowledged leader of the team. He wanted to make sure that maybe Goodell hadn't talked to them before he made his comments. Both of them confirmed to him that Roger Goodell did not talk to either one of them. Strief said, quote, "The man literally stands up at a podium and just lies. It's mind-blowing. He's the commissioner of the biggest sport in the country. It's just totally cool with all the people who employ him, the 32 owners. They just lies to everybody," Strief said. Michael Thomas, wide receiver, one of the players who advocated for the enforcement of Rule 17 to overturn the result of the NFC title game, also said Goodell has not talked to the Saints. Thomas tweeted out, quote, "He ain't talked to us." That's why I used the quote there. This is not the first time that the league's response to the controversy has come into question. Immediately after the game, Saints coach Sean Payton stated that he had heard from the league, which admitted that the refs had blown the call. There was soon a report that the league would make a public admission, but then that never happened. It said the league has only admitted the mistake in private conversations with the Saints. Now the commissioner claims he talked to the Saints players, but the players themselves say he did not, and the story just will not go away. That's disturbing on a number of levels. If you didn't do it, you didn't do it. If you say you talked to Gail Benson, fine, you talked to Gail Benson. That's okay. I talked to the owner of the team who was outspoken about it. I talked to Sean Payton. I talked to Mickey Loomis, who's the general manager. You could say you talked to them, but don't say you talked to the players if you didn't talk to the players. Don't do that. Okay, you're just setting yourself up once again for failure. This has not been what will happen is that we'll have probably a pretty good game on Sunday. And we'll get more into the game tomorrow, obviously. We'll probably have a pretty good game on Sunday. It will whitewash away anything that deals with the Saints loss to the Rams and, to a lesser extent, the Chiefs' loss to the Patriots, which included another bad call in that game that actually was a determining factor in the game, and that was the roughing the passer call on Chris Jones against Tom Brady, where Chris Jones hit his left shoulder and was called for roughing the passer because the official really didn't see it and guessed. Okay, so that's where you are right now. And then you get up, and in a press conference where you need to be careful because this has been a delicate issue for the NFL over the past 2 weeks, you then get up and say, "Well, I've talked to the coaches, I've talked talked to Sean Payton. I talked to the team, the players. Well, if you didn't talk to the team or the players, that doesn't... If you talk to Gail Benson, just say you talked to Gail Benson. If you say you talked to Sean Payton, talk to Sean Payton. Have you talked to the players? No, I have not talked to the players about it. I thought by talking to Sean Payton and talking to Gail Benson, I felt that they were representing the team. And kept it at an executive level. That's all you have to do. But when you get caught in something like that, now you make it worse. All right. Penn State basketball tonight. Purdue is a team that when I was talking about the Big Ten, for the most part in the summertime, now obviously in the summertime I didn't get Penn State right, all right, when I was talking about Penn State and I was going around talking to groups, I did not get Penn State right. But I got the rest of the league pretty much pegged right as to where I thought they would be right now, that Michigan State would be the cream of the crop. I thought they'd be the best. I had labeled Michigan the best team in the summertime. Right now, well, Langford's now out for the year. But everybody else I pretty much pegged as to about where they'd be, except for Purdue. Purdue, I had falling to probably the middle of the pack in the Big Ten because they lost so much that I had great respect for Carson Edwards, but I wasn't sure about the rest of the team. Well, they've, you know, Nebraska, Ohio State, Northwestern. I mean, I can go on and on. The teams were right about where I thought they'd be in this league this year. Because what's interesting is that so many other leagues are so weak this year that the Big Ten is going to get teams in this year that they would not have gotten in last year. I find that very interesting because I have not been overwhelmed. For example, let's take Nebraska. I was not overwhelmed at all. Indiana, not even remotely overwhelmed by them. That's what bothers me about losses to teams like that, because I think they're no better than okay. And they were both close losses by Penn State. Now, one was on the road. We'll see what happens when Nebraska comes here. Purdue's a team, though, that started off the way I thought they were going to play this year. And then to their credit, they have hit stride, and now they've won five in a row. Nathan Bear joins us from JC.com, the Journal Courier in Lafayette. Nathan, welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. How's it going?
It's going very well. When Carson Edwards started to shoot less and distribute more, what difference did it make in Purdue's overall play?
Oh, I think it's made a huge difference. I think it's been one of the biggest strides that the team has made collectively over these past, you know, month or so, as they've won eight of their last nine games. And you can really go back to, I think, the first game that they played against Michigan State when they lost at Breslin Center. And Matt Painter was pretty critical of him after the game, saying that he had essentially guarded himself by being someone who wasn't looking to pass enough. He was relying too much on his jump shot and kind of forcing things at times. And next game out, a few days later at Wisconsin, he makes the winning play of the game by, you know, drawing a double team and dumping underneath to Grady Eifert for what ended up being the game-winning free throws. And that sort of triggered a little bit of what you saw over the next – it's kept going since then. And he made 4-19 shots on Sunday against Michigan State, which sounds right. Like a bad shooting night. And it is. That's a bad shooting game.
Sure,
you can't really spend that. But within that, you're still seeing the way that he gets rid of the ball and moves without the ball, or the way that he's passing. Sometimes it's not directly leading to assists, but it's leading to motion within the offense that leads to a basket. And, you know, early on this season, Purdue wasn't getting enough production down farther into its rotation. And I think part of that was because it was, you know, as confident as Carson Edwards and some other players are in their shots, they were just taking so many jump shots that it wasn't allowing the whole offense to be involved. And now you're starting to see guys like Aaron Wheeler step up and hit some big shots against Michigan State, or Eric Hunter, guys who don't necessarily have a big scoring role on this team, but because of the offense is running more efficiently, that's starting to come through a little bit more now. I've said all along, you know, Carson Edwards is still going to be a high volume shooter. He has to be. He's the guy on
no,
this team.
No question.
Go create
totally
his
agree.
Own shot. Yep. But if you take three or four of those shots per game and turn them into one or two assists, you know, what would have been missed shots and turn them into one or two assists, those 5-6 points a game, that can mean a lot over the course of a Big Ten season.
Kryon Klein is at 18 of his last 32 three-point shots over the last five games. He's the other double-figure scorer on the team. What has his offensive production done to offset the losses from last season?
Well, that's been big, and we kind of expected that to increase just because he was going to finally play starters minutes for the first time. He's a guy that's been in the rotation to some extent ever since he was a freshman. People who were Pitt fans might remember he came in as a freshman that year and hit some big shots in a win there back in 2015. But what I think has also been big for him recently is doing exactly what we were talking about with Carson Edwards. He's another guy who I think realizes that teams are going to be out on him as a jump shooter from the perimeter, and now he started to, you know, get in the middle of a defense and then look and find somebody pretty consistently that's open on the perimeter. A lot of times teams, when they double, are going to double off of the four, and that's leaving Grady Eifert open on the perimeter. And those are both guys who are adept enough that when you leave them without much help on the perimeter, they're going to knock down that shot. Both of those guys have hit some big shots over the last couple games, and it's coming directly off of the attention that Ryan Klein draws when he dribbles into the defense. On top of all that, he's also one of the best guys on this team in terms of just his court vision, ability to avoid turnovers. He's got one of the best assist-to-turnover ratios in program history. So he's a really critical guy, but it, just the same as with Edwards, recently it's been the way that he shares the ball as much as the way he shoots the ball.
Okay, Williams has moved into the starting lineup. Matt Harms is coming off the bench. What has that combination meant as to how the game plays out for Matt Painter?
Well, Harms is more comfortable, I think, coming off the bench, or he seems to be, just based on the way he plays. And people who saw this team last year probably remember that Purdue would start Isaac Haas, who was this 7'2", 300-pound mountain of a guy.
Okay. That's the biggest thing I ever saw.
Yeah, no, he was massive. And then they would use that to kind of, you know, wear teams down. Obviously, you can't really push a guy like that around. And people really struggled with that, and a lot of times would end up just fouling him. But then you had Harms coming in behind him, who's a different kind of athlete. Even though he's 7'3", he's more like 250. He gets up and down the floor faster. He's more of a rim protector, has a little bit more of a vertical game. And that combination really worked, where he come in off the bench, and especially just in terms of the energy he brought. You had a guy coming in with the second wave that was pumping his fists and was vocal would sometimes grind on the other team, if people remember some of the interactions he had with Penn State specifically last year.
Yep.
And I talked to Penn State players before the season, and they kind of said, you know, hey, we respect that. That's his role. That's just how the game is played. So that's a big part of his game, is just being an energy guy and being kind of a nuisance. He's not a dirty player, but he's an annoying player. And I think you like to have those on your team. And then the emergence of Williams has been important, not only because Evan Boudreau got hurt around the same time,
right. But
because Purdue was trying to get its production from the five in sort of an unconventional way. It was having, again, Harms. And then Boudreau, a guy that transferred from Dartmouth, he's 6'9", 220, something like that. So not your traditional center size. And that's what they were trying to get the production from the five with, pulling other guys out to the perimeter, beating them there. But now with Williams, you get a guy who is a legitimate low post presence. He's a big bodied guy, low center gravity, really battles for defensive rebounds, and on top of that has kind of the soft hands that you used to see from someone like Caleb Swanigan, and they're being able to use his passing skills out of the low post. I think that's probably going to increase as the season goes on and as his career goes on. So it has been a big boost for Purdue, just because it gave them something they didn't have before. It gave them a look that they didn't have before, even as recently as mid-December.
Grady Eifert. I look at a guy like him, and I personally feel you don't win games unless you have a guy like him. Would that be an accurate statement when it comes to what his value is to Purdue?
Yeah, and I think it's a guy that he did this his whole career. He was just doing it behind the scenes. He was doing it on the practice court, on Cardinal Court, where fans and media couldn't see it. But he was a guy that for years we'd heard just about his relentlessness, you know, being able to get in there and battle people like Caleb Swanigan, people like Vincent Edwards, battle those guys for rebounds, you know, dive on the floor, get loose balls, know what he's supposed to do on defense, keep the ball moving on offense, all those little things. He was doing it in practice scenarios, but it's only been the end of last season and then all of this season, now that he's a starter and a captain. You know, I think all that grit and those intangibles that he had to have as a walk-on, just to kind of get through that experience. I mean, if people have ever talked to someone who's done that, you know, you're going in and you're just getting absolutely brutalized sometimes, especially when you're coming in as a freshman, and then you don't get any of the reward of playing time. You are just an absolute afterthought on game night, and it's a rough thing to have to go through mentally, and he was a guy that persevered through that, and I think some of that mindset is now kind of playing out at 20-some minutes a game now that he's in the starting lineup for this team. And this is such a young team. I mean, you know, half of this 10-man rotation was not in a Purdue uniform last year, whether those are true freshmen, redshirt freshmen, or Boudreaux coming in from Dartmouth. And I think he exemplifies a lot of things that you're now starting to see, especially some of these freshmen, Aaron Wheeler, Stefan Stefanovic, Eric Hunter. You're seeing those guys come in, and maybe they only play 3 or 4 minutes, but they're coming in and playing hard 3 or 4 minutes. They're making contributions on the defensive end and trying to let their offense work off of that.
How do you view this Penn State game?
Well, I think it's an interesting one for Purdue because I know that Penn State's in a rough spiral here, you know, losing 7 straight. I think they thought, and from talking to Patrick Chambers at Big Ten Media Day, they thought this tough non-conference schedule would prepare them for the Big Ten, and it hasn't necessarily worked out that way. But I look at the schedule, and I see how many close losses they have. I see how many of their other losses have been to teams that are in the net top 30. I mean, they've played a pretty brutal schedule, and they just because they haven't come out on top of any of those games yet doesn't mean they can't. The thing that I would watch from a Purdue standpoint is rebounding, because I respect, you know, Lamar Stevens and Mike Watkins and what those guys can do under a basket. And Purdue is a pretty good offensive rebounding team, but has kind of had its moments from a defensive rebounding standpoint. And is that something Penn State can exploit? And, you know, Penn State's not shooting the ball that well, but they still shoot a high volume. And sometimes when you're shooting at home, you leave the wrong guy open. You know, Shep Garner really burned Purdue last year. I think they're probably glad that he's not around anymore. But I think there's still guys on this team that if it's just their night where they happen to hit, you know, 3 out of 5 instead of 2 out of 4, you know, whatever, those sometimes make the difference in these games. I think Purdue's going to have to be pretty diligent on defense. And just in a larger context, now that Purdue has put itself in this position, you know, 9-2 in the Big Ten,
right,
or I'm sorry, 7-2, right behind Michigan and Michigan State as far as trying to be in the Big Ten race. And I'm writing about this right now, actually, a story I'm about to post. You know, it's now these games, games like this game at Penn State are just as important if you want to win a title as beating Michigan State at home, because that's what separates who goes on the road, who plays with the most consistency, who can go on the road and summon the same kind of, you know, fight and intangibles to start a game as you get when you're playing at home in front of 14,000 people who are supporting you.
I mean, let's face it, a win over Michigan State has tremendous value in the eyes of the committee. A loss to Penn State suddenly blunts momentum and confidence. Hey, believe me, and it does. You know, like, well, what the heck happened there?
I think the fact that it's on the road is a little bit different. And in fact, if Penn State finishes strong and Purdue can win at Penn State,
right,
that's potentially still a quadrant one win over the course of the season if Penn State kind of gets things together. There's still especially this year in the Big Ten, it's just so deep. There's so much value for any team for their NCAA tournament resume, regardless of the Big Ten race, to go on the road and win literally pretty much any game this year.
Nathan, how's Larry Clisby doing? I mean, I can hear him on SiriusXM, obviously, once in a while. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, obviously, and I won't get a chance to talk to him until before the game. How is he doing?
Doing a lot better than they thought he was going to be just a few months before the season. For people who don't know him, you know, a longtime broadcaster for Purdue and was battling both lung and brain cancer, and at first had received a pretty dire diagnosis, and then through treatment, through probably also just the outpouring of support that he got from the entire Purdue community, really lifted his spirits and helped him physically. And they came back and right before the season said pretty much most of it was gone. So he's still battling that, but he's on the road with the team. He has taken some time off this year where they were sort of adjusting some medications for him, because I think it was giving him some memory problems in there in a weird way.
Right.
And that obviously affects you when you're trying to broadcast a game in real time. But he's really been an inspiration for a lot of people with the way that he has fought through this. Not the first time he's fought cancer. He's beaten it before, and it's pretty inspiring to watch him do it again.
Yeah, well, I like him. I've always liked him. So I look forward to seeing him. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night as well. Thanks so much, Nathan. Right. Appreciate your time.
Sure thing. Thanks a lot.
Nathan Baird joining us from JC.com, which is the Lafayette Journal-Courier. And he's the beat writer that covers Purdue basketball. They're here tonight at the Jordan Center at 7 o'clock, and then we're on beginning at 6:30 this evening. Even though campus is closed today, except for essential personnel, there are no classes today. Purdue got here yesterday. The officials are here. So, yes, they are playing the game tonight at 7 o'clock. As per usual, this is not an unusual thing that they're doing tonight. Anytime there's a campus closure the day of a basketball game, they always let students in for free. Well, they're going to do that tonight, and it turns out it's also faculty staff night, and they're getting reduced prices as well. It's Coaches versus Cancer Night. Part of the proceeds from every ticket that is sold to tonight's game is going to go to Coaches versus Cancer. They cleared the $3 million mark in fundraising last year. That's overall. That's net for the 24 years they've been in. That's terrific. All right, a lot more coming up. More on Roger Goodell and the Super Bowl. His press conference yesterday did not win over fans in New Orleans, and it absolutely did not win over the players. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Top of the hour coming up. News next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.